The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Today we meet the unluckiest pervert in the world, probably. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot to choose from. This guy's pretty unlucky. And then we travel back to the iceberg to take a look at a terrifying conspiracy theory. Are aliens using humans to get high? Today on Dead Rabbit Radio. Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Dead Rabbit Radio. I'm your host, Jason Carpenter. I'm having a great day. I hope you guys are having a great day too. We got a lot of stuff to cover, so we're going to hop right into it. We are going to start off by giving a shout out to our newest Patreon, Sister Celestine. Thank you so much for supporting the show. You are going to be our pilot, our captain, whatever vehicle we use today. You're going to be in charge. If you can't support the Patreon, that's fine as well. Just help get the word out about the show. Really, really helps out a lot. Sister Celestine, let's go ahead and hop into Jason Jalopy. Let's take a ride all the way out to New Jersey. Specifically, we're going to Haddonfield, New Jersey. Isn't that where Halloween took place? Not like it was a real event. Isn't that where that documentary took place, H2O? The one where, that documentary where Coolio got his guts ripped out. Sister Celestine, we're driving over to New Jersey. It's summer 2015. And we're going to meet a man named John Michael Moosbach. He's 31 years old. Now, we're not going to meet him because he's a big old disgusting pervo. This is a true crime story. So technically, I'll say allegedly, but he already pled guilty to one of the crimes we're going to talk about. So John Michael Moosbach, 31 years old. He begins chatting with a 13-year-old girl from New York. So gross, right? And of course, it turns into sexting and then exchanging explicit photos. So her parents find out, and they call the cops, and the cops call the cops in New Jersey. That whole thing goes on, right? But that's not even the interesting part of the story. Unfortunately, that type of disgustingness happens all the time. People do it. Hopefully, they get caught. Sometimes they don't. Sometimes it takes them a couple times to get caught. It's gross! But that's not what we're here for. Because then that's just a news story, unfortunately. That's not a weird news story. This is the weird part of the news story. So, he's arrested in March 2016. In October 2017, he pleads guilty to child endangerment. So, he's talking to the judge. He's like, listen, judge, I know it was super gross. I'm sorry, and I'll never do it again. He crosses his fingers behind his back. Judge is like, bailiff, can you make sure that the defendant's fingers are not crossed? That's a normal thing they have to do in court. That's why they handcuff you, so you can't cross your fingers behind your back. Oh, I was crossing my toes, Your Honor. I'm a total pervo. I'll do whatever I want. He basically tells the judge, yeah, I plead guilty. Shouldn't have done that. Yeah, this was a full-on, like, sexting and exchanging pictures and stuff like that. He had pictures of her on his computer. Super gross. 2 years suspended prison sentence. That's all he got. And a lifetime of parole. So, is that the weird part of the story? Sister Celestine says as we're driving around New Jersey. I go, no. That, unfortunately, again, is something that often happens in these cases. People get arrested. They get charged with something heavy. They plead down. The prosecutors don't want to waste the time. Maybe the family doesn't want to have a long trial, whatever. So, they give them a lesser sentence. It should have been way more than that. Just getting the pictures from the girl and him sending the pictures of the girl. Oof. Could have been doing some serious time. But 2 years suspended sentence. Probably had a good lawyer. Prosecutor probably didn't want to deal with it. All that stuff. That's totally normal. This is where the story gets weird. This is where the story becomes Dead Rabbit Radio worthy. And gave me quite a good chuckle. So in 2019, there was this informant. This confidential informant working with the Department of Homeland Security. On a completely unrelated thing. And I could just imagine the CI and Department of Homeland Security agent having lunch one day, and the CI's like, oh, you know what? This has nothing to do with what we're talking about, right? Like, I'm helping you do this thing, but you want to hear something super funny? You want to hear a hilarious story? And Homeland Security's like, yeah, of course. Who doesn't want to hear a hilarious story? So, this is what happened. John Michael Musbach was arrested in March 2016. In October 2017, he pled guilty and again, he got a slap on the wrist. But in between that, in May 2016, he's big brain here. You know what I need to do? You know what I need to do to make this whole thing disappear where there's tons of physical evidence? There's tons of like photos and texts of us talking. You know what I would really help me is if I had the girl murdered. If I like killed this 13-year-old girl, that would totally make this whole case go away. No one would find that suspicious, right? The 13-year-old girl just disappears. That's never in the news, right? So he hires a hitman online. He finds this hitman online. Probably deep web, but maybe not. He finds a hitman online and they negotiate a sale. He goes, so listen, I want this girl killed. She's 14 at this point. I want this girl killed. She's 14 years old. Is that too young? Can you do that? And the hitman's like, oh, no, that's totally fine. We actually give you a discount for that. We have to use less ammo because they're tinier. He's like, oh, I didn't know that. $20,000, please. And I will send a hitman out post haste to kill a 14-year-old girl. So this dude I don't have $20,000. I don't think I've ever had $20,000, right? This dude flips the dude a couple bitcoins worth $20,000 and then starts emailing this hitman going, hey, dude, when are you going to do it? Hey, dude, she's still alive, man. Like, when are you going to do it? Email regarding 14-year-old murder. When are you going to kill this 14-year-old? He keeps constantly harassing this hitman, which you don't want to do. Out of all the people to not harass, the professional killer, right? Like that's just common knowledge. Don't harass the assassin. Anyways, eventually the hitman is like, oh, dang it, getting alerts on his phone late at night. He's getting ready to like shoot some politician. The phones buzzing in his pocket, accidentally kills like some secretary. He's like, ah. Hitman goes, listen, the original person, I'm not the original hitman. The original hitman who originally got this job got busted for cocaine possession. So that hitman is out of commission. I will take over, but I require an extra $5,000. See, I cost more. I cost $25,000. So I already got $20,000 from this dude because it's like this weird hitman thing. I need an extra $5,000. So at this point, he goes, well, no, I'm not going to pay an extra $5,000. It took you guys too long. I've been waiting to see this 14-year-old girl get murdered all this time, guys. I want my money back. That's another thing you probably don't want to ask an assassin for, right? A refund. He kills people for a living. And he does coke, right? This bad combination. Very, very excitable man. Says, listen, I want my money back. The girl's still alive. I want my money back. And at this point, to just top everything off, right? This guy who was committing sex crimes with a 13-year-old girl via the internet, then hires a hitman, then pesters the hitman, asking, when's it going to be done? When's it going to be done? And then asks for a refund of said hitman. The hitman then tells him, hey, bro, I hate to break it to you. I'm not a hitman. This is a scam. So you're not getting your money back. You're keeping your $20,000. And if you email me one more time, I'm going to call the police. So at that point, John goes, okay. I won't. That to him was scarier than if the hitman said, I'm coming after you. When he thought it was an actual assassin who he let loose to murder a 14-year-old girl. Oh, he was on him every day. Hey, dude, how's it going? Hey, you know, I hate to be a bug, but, you know, have you murdered that person yet? See you later. But when it came, it was all scam. It was basically someone had set up a website saying, I will murder people for $20,000 and was not murdering anybody. And so John just goes, well, lesson learned. That's what I get for trying to hire an assassin. But then, so that all happened like mid 2016, he hired this dude in 2016 and found out it was a scam, lost $20,000. October 2017, he gets nothing. 2 years suspended sentence and a lifetime of parole. It's nothing. That's nothing for that level of a crime. But he's in the clear. It must have been like, good thing I didn't have that 14-year-old murdered. I really wish I had that $20,000 back. But hey, yeah, what are you going to do? In 2019, though, when a confidential informant's having lunch with a Department of Homeland Security officer and goes, You want to hear a funny story? That is the story that he told. He goes, yeah, so here's the thing. This dude had tried hiring someone to murder some 14-year-old girl. Homeland Security looked into it, started digging through emails that was being sent, was able to track his username to this and da-da-da-da-da. Boop! Kicked in his door and got him. So that is the saga of the unluckiest pervert in the world. Not only did he get scammed by a fake hitman, he eventually got turned in years later. For that. It would be one thing if this all happened at the same time, but at this point, you know, 2 years has passed. He's probably like, oh, you know, sure looked foolish trying to have that 14-year-old girl murdered, but everything worked out in the end. And then he's like, I wonder who that is. Maybe it's someone giving me back $20,000. Maybe it is a special prize. Homeland Security kicks in his door. Sister Celestine, let's hop in that carpenter copter. We are leaving behind New Jersey. We are headed out to the iceberg. Helicopters flying out. I want to give a shout out again to some weirdo on Twitter, aka Jack, for creating the Excel spreadsheet. It makes it so easy to look at these conspiracy theories. This is one that I came across before I saw the iceberg, but in a different medium. The conspiracy theory is aliens are using humans as drugs. Conspiracy theory iceberg really dates back to late 2016, early 2017, mid 2017, around there. But back in 2009, there was a television show called Torchwood, and it featured everyone's favorite bisexual immortal superhero, Captain Jack something, I don't remember his last name, but it's great. If you don't watch Torchwood, if you've never watched Torchwood, it's a British show, it was a spinoff of Doctor Who. Imagine X-Files or Supernatural if every ending was super depressing. Super dark show. Very, very well done show. So they came out with a show called Children of Men in 2009. It was basically a 5-episode miniseries. And spoiler alert for this one, all the children on Earth freeze. What they're doing, they just stop. Hopefully one of them wasn't flying a plane. All the kids just freeze and they all go, we. And then they just start playing again. Now, Torchwood is this government group that has to investigate paranormal activity. And so people are like, dude, what's going on with that? And Captain Jack, who's like super just like morally, he has some issues. He's like this immortal dude. And he's like, I don't know. I don't know what that was. He's the hero of this show, by the way. A couple hours later, all the kids freeze and they go, we are. It's like, what is going on? Politicians are trying to figure this out. Scientists all over the world. Captain Jack's kind of, his eyes are shifting side to side. Next time, kids go, we are coming. We are coming. We are coming. So it's some sort of message being broadcasted using the children. And Captain Jack's like, it's a mystery, right? Nobody knows who this is. And then the big thing, I remember watching this on television. I was like, oh no. The kids go, we are coming. Back. We are coming back. What it turns out was back in the 40s. These aliens came down and made a deal with the British government. Give us 42 human children or we're going to destroy England. And Captain Jack was like, that's fair. The show, it's super dark because he will constantly make the decision for the greater good. There was an episode where these fairies said, we're going to destroy England if you don't kidnap that little girl from her mom. She's really half fairy. She shouldn't be here. If you don't kidnap that little girl from her mom, we're going to destroy England. The hero of the show basically kidnaps the little girl and throws her into the fairy realm to save England. So back in like the 1940s, Captain Jack was like, okay, yeah, sure. So they load a bunch of kids up on a bus and they get abducted by aliens. And he's like, yeah, you know, I had to do it, right? So now we're in the modern time. We're in like the year 2009 in this show. The aliens are coming back and they go, we need more kids. Those 42 kids, they are good, but we want more of them. We want like 10% of the kids of the world. It's a really, really good show. And it really goes into all the political ramifications and the government's trying to figure out, like, do we do this? Do we not? And all the stuff that's going on. 2009, we're watching this, they show the alien show up, and the alien's wearing this canister on its back, and in the canister is one of the kids from the bus, completely unaged, sitting in the back. It's like this breathing tubes, and it's in this fluid, hasn't aged a day, so for the past 40 years, it's been a little kid in this container in this alien's back. It explained what these kids were for, and why they want 10% of them. They use them as drugs. They go, the human body contains a drug that gets us high. It's recreational. It's like not even for their species. It's not to keep them alive. They like token on humans. They like smoking that sweet, sweet Homo sapien. And I remember watching that, and it's a great science fiction show, and it's brilliant. If you haven't seen Torchwood, I recommend checking it out. The idea that, one, you have the person not aging, so they're stuck in that perpetual hell. You can't even hope to eventually just become an old man. You should become an old man and break out of the container. So I thought that was a very, very terrifying premise. So when I saw on the conspiracy theory iceberg, one of the first things that popped up, you know, a couple years ago when I looked at it, aliens use humans as drugs. I went, I know where that came from. That came from that episode of Torchwood. Because some of these do seem to have origins like that. Even the one of the first episodes we covered, Eggless Travel, really came out of fiction or quasi-fiction, a fake narrative. But I found, and so I was aware of that for years. I was like, oh, that one's on there. When I started doing the show, I was like, I'm not really going to do that one. It's based on a television show. It's exciting. I would love to talk to my friends about Torchwood. But, you know, I got other stuff to cover. I found an earlier story that may show this is a little more than a work of fiction. Sister Celestine, let's hop in that Carpenter copter. We are flying out to Navarre, Florida. Leaving behind the iceberg, it's dark. It's April 1990. Here's a woman, her husband, and her son are walking along an empty beach. Just having fun. Skipping stones. Skipping stones, just like Splinter. And then a green light appears in the water. And starts to lift up out of the sea. At that point, a yellow-white light appears around the woman. Let's call her Margaret. A yellow-white light appears around Margaret, and she sees 6 to 7 alien humanoids standing around her. Now, this was reported by George Avery with MUFON, with the Mutual UFO Network. But even he was said, we don't have a description of these aliens. She just said there was like 6 to 7 beings around me all of a sudden. She goes, my son, who was right next to me, is now gone. And I could see my husband at the edge of the yellow light that had encircled me. She starts to scream, but her voice is stifled. There's nothing coming out. And one of the aliens walks towards her and says, calm down. You know it is useless to fight. It's interesting because the statement, you know it's useless to fight, implies that this isn't her first encounter with these things. In fact, she said, she doesn't really know how this happened, but she recognized one of these aliens. Calm down. You know it is useless to fight. She feels herself being taken to the green light in the water. And instantly she's in a room filled with fog. She's standing on a shiny metal floor, completely naked. She hears a noise behind her. It's the noise of a man sobbing, screaming hysterically. She turns around and there's two naked men standing behind her. One of them is just flipping out. I don't know if the other one was totally, he's like, it's Tuesday night. It's Abduction Tuesday. But one of them was sobbing hysterically. Then she sees what she defines as a, quote, human doctor. So I don't know if that means that there was something about it that seemed like it was a imitation of a human or looked human but didn't seem human to her. But she said it was a human doctor. She described him with pale skin and freckles everywhere, reddish hair, wearing glasses, and a green set of scrubs that was covered in bloodstains. Next to him was a gray alien. So this one is actually defined as a typical gray alien. This gray alien standing next to the doctor, and he's holding a canister. And there's a tube going from the canister into the gray alien's neck. Now, at this point, she said she was forced to look at the canister. She looks down. In the canister is a human baby with tubes coming out of the baby, out of the canister, and into the gray alien. She said it was a baby, had a big head, but its arms and legs were completely atrophied. They were like pencils. This little baby floating around in this canister. Next thing she knew, she's on a table. And there's tables next to her. There's other people there. She can see other humans in this room. And something is covering her head. It wasn't like it was placed directly covering her view. It was like a shield above her. So she's laying there. Her legs are spread open, knees up. Typical pose that you would see a woman in for a gynecological exam or giving birth. There's a white blanket covering her legs so she can't see exactly what's going on. But she sees standing between her open legs is that gray alien holding an empty canister. The alien speaks to her telepathically. Don't fight it. Go with the pain. Go with the pain. Next thing she knows, she's just on the beach. Her husband and her son are just standing there. Cool night sky whipping around them. So that story took place in 1990. I think the question is, when was it reported to Greg Avery? I can't find any record of that. It's possible that this story was reported after the episode of Torchwood. Some woman in Florida is like, oh, I have great fanfic about that. I'm going to insert myself as an original character. So it could have been inspired by that show. We will put on our conspiracy caps and assume that the story is true, which we often do. Let's take a look at it. I think the idea, again, what's creepy about it, that's hard to pick out, right? Being kidnapped in front of witnesses is always terrifying. But the baby in the canister. Again, the fact that its arms and legs are atrophied makes me think it's been alive for so long, right? It's just a baby. If it was a healthy baby in there, you're like, hey, it just popped out yesterday. But the fact that it was a baby, but its muscles that it should be using are atrophied, makes you think it's been in there for a while. And the tube coming out of the baby into the gray alien. Now, you could argue maybe the gray alien is feeding the baby drugs or something like that, but there's just a sinisterness to it. It's not like they're like a Cabbage Patch doll that the alien's cradling. It's carrying it around, and the woman is forced to look at the canister. And then to see that same canister being used later as her legs are in that birthing position. You could argue that the alien was putting the baby inside of her. But again, with the atrophied legs and things like that, also the baby's been pumped full of alien neck fluid. I don't know. I don't know if it'd be the healthiest baby. But you could argue that as well. But I think it's a perfect story about, are aliens using humans for drugs? Some people, that's where the adrenochrome story has come from. That's where the adrenochrome stories come from, that reptilians are using human adrenal fluid, i.e. adrenochrome, to get high. So it's not that you can just do it yourself. You have to be a shape-shifting reptilian for it to really work. So that's also a level of that. I think this is a creepy conspiracy theory because you've often seen the thing like we're just cattle to the aliens, or they feed off of our souls, or in the whole louche idea and the archons and all that stuff. Or we're just meat to them, they're reptilians, and they're fattening us up so they can eat us, a la V, which is a great television show if you haven't seen that. You have all that stuff. But this one is even more, I think, insulting to humanity. It's not our soul, it's not that our souls are delicious, that we've lived these good lives, or these lives full of pain, and it's fattening up our souls. It's that we're just to get high, which I don't know, apparently I just went through puberty, but we're just to get high. We're less than sustenance. Were just a drug to them, which I find infinitely more creepy, because that's just nothing. It would be like, imagine, I remember once a long time ago, I had this stoner thought that this shows you Jason stoner thoughts. I go, dude, what if all of, this is the most stoner thing I've probably ever said, and definitely the most stoner thing I've ever admitted to. What if all of reality, so the universe is created, and everything that happens on every single planet, every speck of dust being blown across an alien landscape, every flower blossoming, every first kiss after the wedding vows are completed, every teardrop standing next to your dying grandfather, every single part of human reality, not even human reality, every single part of reality is just one big nug of weed, right? And when the universe, the Big Bang is created, and it has all of these infinite experiences, and then it becomes back to before the Big Bang, and then God takes this big old nug, dude, and he loads it into his pipe, one of those little cheap glass pipes. It's all rainbow colored, and he puts that nug of reality in, and he experiences every moment ever with that hit. And he's like, oh, dude. That was some good, good reality, man. yo, Michael, hit this. And we're like, no way, dude. Last time I smoked some of your weed, dude, I was lit for like 10 eons. He's like, I know, it's good stuff, huh? And then creates another big bang. A whole new set of experiences, a whole new set of memories. Everything we experience is just to get God high. Every success, every failure, everything we go through. Dude, this is some good reality right here, man. You gotta take this. No way, dude. The last person who smoked some of your stuff, he became Lucifer. He threw him in hell. He's like, oh yeah, dude, that hell thing was pretty dope, dude. He gave me some nightmares when I smoked that nug. That idea to me is far creepier than just being culled by aliens or even alien invasion, where we're fighting against the aliens. To think that we are so small on the intergalactic totem pole that we're basically hits of acid. If it was up to me, I'd much rather fight off a militarized alien invasion force that uses tactics, that has goals, that's trying to secure resources, supply lines, versus a bunch of alien junkies, because they're unpredictable. They just want to get high, and you're the drug. If that's the case, you can't win a war of attrition against a junkie. You can't outlast them. They want you to get high. Warlords eventually get tired. Sieges eventually end, one way or the other. A drug addict never stops until they get their drug. And an alien drug addict will never stop. They want nothing but a future where all the humans that are too old to be used as drugs are disposed of. Those that could produce children to create more drugs are kept. And you have babies being born into a world where a tube is shunted into the back of their neck. They're locked in a canister that will keep them alive, barely conscious, floating there, looking out at a sea of gray aliens, each one with a canister, each one containing a piece of what was once the mighty human race, but which is now a prisoner of an alien's addiction. DeadRabbitRadio@gmail.com is going to be our email address. You can also hit us up at facebook.com/DeadRabbitRadio. Twitter is @DeadRabbitRadio. Dead Rabbit Radio is the daily paranormal, conspiracy, and true crime podcast. You don't have to listen to it every day, but I'm glad you listened to it today. Have a great one, guys.